pena. Ay, cómo va, cómo camina y se va. Ay, cómo va. Ay, mi morena. Ay, mi morena. Qué hermosura.
Guess the name of that tune. Yes, it's Ay Mi Morena. It's a Latin expression saying, goodness gracious, woman, referring to a Latina. That is from Club de Belugas. It is one of the leading lounge and new jazz bands in Germany. How you like that? This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and, well, Israel has, or soon will, it will be announced, it has its a new prime minister, who was the old prime minister, and who, it is projected, in this election, would have made history in Israel, of scoring a fourth, I believe, consecutive term in office. It was a very, very tight race. It's still fraught with a lot of controversy, and I'm sure that's going to be looked at even more closely now that the results are in, because there are many, many objections and many, many questions by candidates and parties over this. And of course, we have the Palestinian population just grieving that yet another term of misery awaits them. What is interesting to me is the question of the role of Donald Trump in this election. And we cannot at all dispute that Trump played a major role in increasing the political currency of Benjamin Netanyahu, hosting him several times in the United States, taking so-called international policy positions favorable to Israel over Arab countries and so forth, of course, coming through with billions of dollars in commitments to Israel, on top of the billions it already receives, and in fact, going one step better, where no president I could recall in recent memory has gone, which is to physically campaign for Netanyahu, and to have the reciprocal arrangement where Netanyahu comes to the United States as a guest of the United States, i.e. Trump, addresses Congress and pretty much makes no pretense that he was influencing U.S. foreign policy. So the question is, as the political fallout develops after this election, to what degree do you think that Trump, Donald Trump, played a critical role in the election of Netanyahu. Do you see it as a kind of direct involvement and direct interference in another country's internal affairs? Do you think it was appropriate? And do you think that the United States should worry when a president just goes off the rails and literally acts as a kind of campaign sidekick for a president who was and still is immensely unpopular in his own country? Of course, we'll talk more about this, but I wanted to tackle this question first. What do you think about the U.S. involvement, and by U.S. I mean Trump's involvement, in the Israeli elections? Was it appropriate for the President of the United States to be overtly involved in the election of Netanyahu, who is dealing with his own barrage of criticisms in his own country? The president, I think, needs to explain, or we need to have it explained. Is that interference? When the president of one country comes to another country specifically to encourage a vote for his, quote, friend, and then contributes in order to strengthen Netanyahu's hand, to give him even greater credence, funds, diverts billions of dollars, ostensibly to help Israel. But we know that it was a kind of an around the world way of saying, I'm just happy to be here for my friend. Was that simply appearing for support of a friend over all these months, and then seeing the direct relationship between that effort of being visibly endorsing Netanyahu and the eventual victory of Netanyahu, even though he was facing an uphill climb? He was facing stiff opposition. What do you think of the role of Donald Trump in the Israeli election? And what does it portend for that office, the office of President of the United States? We never had a president who went out of his way this way, you know, going there, being seen. There was no mistake that Trump supported Netanyahu. Was that proper? Was that good following protocol? Was that something that we should be concerned about? Are there no restrictions, considering that no U.S. president in any way has done that up until now? 888-874-4888 is your number to call. I'd like to know what you think about that. And on the flip side of that coin, in the United States, we did not have a verbalized outcry or criticism directed at Trump for essentially being a campaign adjunct to Netanyahu's campaign. How were U.S. funds that suddenly were made available, how did that affect the perception of people that This was a good match, and it would work out well for both Netanyahu and Trump. You have Netanyahu coming to the United States, addressing Congress, and essentially annotating what he considered good and preferable policy, foreign policy, in the United States. I think it's a question that we need to ask, and I think it is a question that Trump needs to answer, and I think it is a question that Congress needs to address immediately. Is this a form of interference? This, mind you, is not your regular citizen of the United States. This is not an activist from the United States going to Israel and aiding the election of Netanyahu or anybody for that matter. This was not that scenario. This was the head of state of the United States playing a pivotal role in a very, very narrow election, a very hotly contested election with a very unpopular prime minister who recognized he was in trouble and needed some help. Trump, it might have served his agenda to be seen by Jews in the United States, certainly the pro-Israeli Jews in the United States, the pro-Netanyahu Jews in the United States, that President Trump likes the Jewish community. And he made it very clear. They coordinated this, and there are so many references of President Trump making reference to how the Democratic Party hates Jews, how the Republicans hate Jews, this kind of rhetoric. So we had a two-sided effect. But the primary concern, I think, and the question that ought to be raised is, was this proper? Was this in line with what the United States has long practiced as proper procedure and conduct of the president and his office in literally aiding and abetting the election of anybody in any country? Should the president not have stayed out of it and let the chips fall where they may in Israel with regard to these elections? And then after the elections, you go about your business. But that was not what happened here. What do you think of the president's conduct? 888-874-4888. And what should we, meaning Congress actually, what should Congress actually be asking right now? And what should it be concerned about in any head of state, in any president who chooses to go so far off the rails? And of course, Trump doesn't care, neither does Netanyahu. They are mirror images of each other in this regard. They have no regard. They have no intention of obeying or even observing protocols that have been in place for so long. I find it really shocking, to be very honest, that the President of the United States literally has be he became a kind of helpmate in a foreign government's a chief of staff, not chief of staff, a foreign government's president's political quest, an active part of getting him reelected. And even if he wasn't reelected, the fact that this occurred and Trump made it look normal. Nobody in the United States objected. So it must mean now that we should expect, and we shouldn't be surprised, if in 2020 we see people, Prime Minister of France, coming over to support a candidate and walking the campaign trail with the candidate, or we see heads of state of other countries getting hands-on involved in U.S. elections. Does that sit well with you? Does it raise any questions or concerns with you? That's the question. Okay, nobody's answering that question, so we will move on. Here's the other question, and it comes out of Brooklyn, actually, where there is a measles outbreak, and there's a concern, especially in specifically identified communities, that they've located the outbreak as being in these areas. The decision by the mayor of the city of New York, William de Blasio, is to compel people in these identified areas to have vaccinations, because the healthcare system and the health advisors to the mayor have decided that it is now at a critical stage of contagion. And in order to stem the tide of an even greater spread of measles, which is a communicable disease, that the people in this area should be vaccinating their children and even themselves. But certainly, because the disease has been identified mostly among children. Now, people are saying, some people are saying, we don't want vaccinations. For religious reasons, many of them are Orthodox Jews. They say, for religious reasons, we do not want any vaccinations. We do not, we haven't historically embraced the idea of vaccinations for our children. The other point of view from the mayor is this is a public health issue. And as the mayor of the city of New York, I have to exercise some degree of influence here so that I can save the spread of this disease before it becomes beyond control. So we have to take preemptive measures. While I appreciate some people's views about vaccines, I also have to run a city, and I have to protect the citizens of the city, the residents of the city, from possible contagion. So basically he's saying, for now I'm asking for willing participation, but I will soon move to the next stage, which is to enforce vaccination in the interest of public health. Where do you stand on this? Does the city have the right, or does any governmental entity have the right to force vaccinations on people in the interest of containing possible contagion of a very serious disease? Or do people ultimately have the right to decide whether they should or should not be vaccinated, whether their children should or should not be vaccinated? And then in the middle of this, we have to ask the question, who ultimately gets to decide what the ultimate authority here is. Who has ultimate authority here? Parents and individuals around being forced to accept vaccinations, or the city, governmental apparatus, which people may or may not trust to begin with, to impose something that individuals oppose. If you had to make that decision, what decision would you make? 888-874-4888. So now you have two subjects to react to. We have several more, but I don't want to put too much on the plate at the same time. So we have the Israeli election, heavily influenced and in a pivotal way by the President of the United States, who literally campaigned in Israel for Netanyahu. And we have the question of vaccinations. So take your choice. Let's hear what you have to say. 888-874-4888. All right, I will pick another one. Maybe you don't like those. You're getting kind of finicky. I have to watch you. All right, so let's talk about this. Does Joe Biden, who seems to have opened up a little bit of a lead in the presidential contest of 2020, despite a lot of things that are hanging around his neck, number one, his age, number two, the charges that have confronted him lately, and even before that, years ago, that he's a little too affectionate with women. He has apologized and he has made all kinds of speeches of atonement saying, well, you know, nothing, I didn't mean anything by it. I'm just a kind of affectionate guy. But from now on, I will watch myself and keep my distance. So with that, and he is seen as among the pack so far as the most experienced statesman, if you will. And they're building up his advisors and his campaign, building him and positioning him as the old-fashioned kind of president America has always wanted. He's a guy, he's got a sense of humor, he is a man of the people, he is somebody you can trust in terms of good judgment, and he recognizes that he's not perfect, and he has attacked the problem straight on without any kerfuffling. He's been very, very direct about it. But is he right for the job now? What is your view? 888-874-4888. Patricia, what are you addressing on the topics so far?
Actually, I'm going to take a stab at both.
Which
afternoon,
ones?
Therese, good afternoon, and good afternoon to the PRN family. Oh. I'm going to tackle Israel first. Because
okay.
This election, I watched very, very closely because, in my judgment, it is a harbinger for what's going to happen here in 2020. These two men have so much in common. They're both, well, Trump lacks intellectual capacity and fortitude. I don't know that I would subscribe that to Netanyahu. He seems to at least have some intellect about him, even though they may be unscrupulous, but they are both, just infected with this entitlement sense of power, and they don't care what they have to do to retain it. And they have both used race-based politics to promote their agendas. So, they are mirror images of each other. And so the fact that he could come here and get undying and unwavering support from Trump means that when Trump's turn comes around, he can expect a reciprocal arrangement, not just from Netanyahu, but from anyone who is aligned with his viewpoint. And, you know, in Europe, this right-wing, race-based, infectious rhetoric is spreading like wildfires. It's not unique to Trump, and it's not unique to Trump and the U.S. It's invading across Europe. Most people, I don't think most Americans realize the amount of money that Israel receives in terms of U.S. Contribution to the Israeli government. I mean, in per capita terms, each American directly gives at least $500 to each Israeli. I don't think Americans are aware of that. College education in Israel is free. Anybody, every kid who applies to college in Israel is accepted, regardless of what their academic record was in high school. They have universal health care. We are literally subsidizing Israel at our own detriment. And I don't think most Americans realize that. So, unfortunately, what happened with Netanyahu is a bad sign for what's going to happen for us in 2020. It's not good.
Why do you think that the president's action, I mean, active support of Netanyahu, which defies the actions of presidents up until now, to keep out of elections, at least to make it appear that, you know, they're keeping their distance and letting the process work itself out. What do you think, what is the reason that Congress never addressed this?
You know, this is a new era, and everyone seems to be in absolute abject fear of this man. It is if nobody can respond in a way that is substantive and based on principle. And I don't understand it. I don't. You have members of the Congressional Black Caucus running to the AIPAC meeting, while you have Netanyahu promoting race-based policies in the West Bank, and they don't see the connection between what Netanyahu is doing in Palestine and what Trump is doing to black and brown people here in this country. There is a disconnect.
Thank you. I mean, it is crystal clear what you're saying, and I happen to agree. Thank you so much, Patricia, for your call and getting us started today. From Brooklyn, David, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Hello, David. How are you?
Yeah, well, getting along. And I'm going to go to both the first two issues. First of all, I believe that by Trump embracing Netanyahu, as you know, as much as he does, he's sending a signal to some of the Jewish community. You know, a lot of people don't understand that Jewish people have all kinds of different opinions. You know, everyone doesn't agree with Israel, and some see the injustice of a nation that was formed by ethnic cleansing. That's how the Eastern European people got Israel as a state by getting rid of the Palestinians. Over a million Palestinians, if you look at 1948 to 1947, just getting them out of the country. And, you know, so it's a signal to those people, especially in those Jewish people who are supporters of Zionism, going from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party. So he's getting a sort of dividend by doing this by appealing to those people. And as I saw a couple of days ago, you even see a demonstration where it says Jews for Trump. So that's one benefit. That's another benefit he's getting from it. And, you know, the fact is that you're dealing with a very powerful apparatus in terms of the Zionist Jewish community. And, you know, so it's good for him. But I might also remind people, going a little to the next item, is that every group, Orthodox and a lot of non-Orthodox Jewish people, have nothing to do with Israel. But you never hear anything about that in the media. They don't talk. They give you the position of those who are the pro-Zionist people. But over there in Williamsburg, they have the Satmars. They don't have anything to do with Israel at all. So the point is that, you know, it's very good for Trump to try to get some more people on the Republican bandwagon for his run next year. So that's another thing. Now, with the vaccination, we really have to think about that, because you know, a lot of people who read the papers, you never read anything in the papers about people who have had the vaccination still get mumps or measles, and you know, it's always that if you get this vaccination, you'll be saved from this disease. But they never say anything negative. I look at the New York Times, and I don't see anything. Everybody is recommending vaccination. But there's a whole lot of money involved when you're talking about these big industries like the pharmaceutical industry. So that's what we have. We have some things that are being promoted to make profit for the corporations, and that's in particular pharmaceutical industry, and people don't understand it, and they've been lied to about what these things will do. They make a profit for the manufacturer without any risk, and most people don't even know it. They don't understand that the government is paying millions of dollars out to people who have been injured by vaccines. And, you know, you never see that in the paper. They leave that off because they're getting too much revenue from advertising from the vaccine makers.
So let's say you are the mayor of the city of New York and you are in the middle of this dilemma. It's a hot political issue now. How do you deal with it? How do you balance the health of the residents of the city?
As I look at it, people in office like Mr. de Blasio and so forth, they're pretty beholden, believe it or not, I believe, to the corporate structure. So I think he is going to respond to what the corporations want him to do, is, you know, to enforce or lean on people, even put people in jail who don't want to do what they want, because there's, I imagine, there's fantastic profit involved in selling stuff, and even if it's defective, you have no liability because of the law of the Congress that and you know, prevents anybody from suing the pharmaceutical company, the doctor, or the hospital. So this is a fantastic source of revenue by insisting that someone get a vaccine that it is probably more dangerous than the disease itself. So it's,
okay,
you know,
I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm asking, how what is the resolution to be when the head of the city, the mayor of the city, says we have on hand here a possible massive contagion brewing, and we have to place we have to protect other people other than the ones who have already been contaminated with measles. We have to do something to prevent total or widespread contamination. How do you think, what is the best way to resolve this dilemma?
Oh boy, that's a hard one, because people can't get the real information from the corporate media. But alternative media has to come into play to let people know that these truths about vaccines and how dangerous they are, and they're not safe and effective, even though the New York Times is telling people that. And in other ways, maybe on the internet and so forth, to get this information out, because people are completely oblivious, most of the people, to the truth about these vaccines. They don't understand. And as I say, the media is not there to do that. It's there to promote the pharmaceutical companies. And that's what has to be done. I mean, it's a very tough thing to do, because the ruling class who controls the corporations, whatnot, have so much influence on things.
Well, thank you. Thanks for addressing these two points. Prema from New York, you're on the air. Hello? Okay, she is no longer on the air. We were just getting to you. So here are the subjects that we are broaching today. We're dealing with the quandary in the city of New York over this matter of vaccinations. The mayor of the city says they have identified, health officials have identified some areas, specific areas, where there is a measles outbreak and it is at the point of mass contagion. The city, therefore, is responsible to do something proactively to address it. And what the city has decided to do is to require, especially in those areas already identified, to require people to get vaccinations. And the people in that area, as well as other residents of the city of New York, there's a large contingent of them that are making an argument that they cannot, people cannot and should not be forced to get vaccinations because there is so much happening in the world of health, especially in alternative health, that questions this great success that is said to have occurred with the application of vaccinations in dampening down the statistics of people getting the disease. Okay, so the mayor says that people ought to have vaccinations for measles. And now, at this point, he's making it kind of voluntary, but there's no question, if you listen to the undertones, that he is likely to get more forceful about it and to require vaccinations on penalty of fines and even imprisonment for people who decide they will not cooperate. They will not have vaccinations for all kinds of reasons, but they will not have it. So what is the way through this dilemma, and how do you get people to appreciate the arguments of both sides? Does it even matter? Is the individual more powerful? Is individual decision more important, more powerful than the collective benefit of vaccinations? That's the question. How do you work it out? We also are talking about Trump's role in the election in Israel that seems to have sealed the deal for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The question I'm putting on the table is, Trump broke all historical precedents by being a president actively campaigning in the other country, in Israel, for the election of a candidate. That violated all U.S. precedents for presidents. Was that a proper thing to do? Is there any trouble that you have with that? Why is it not seen as interference, undue interference in an election process that should be independent of any such influence by a foreign head of state? I mean, would we be comfortable as Americans, let's say in 2020, and a candidate is running, and next thing you know, the president of a major, France, is walking the streets with the candidate and actively campaigning with the candidate, and the candidate wins? How do we address this question? What is the responsibility of Congress? How do you rein in? This is the first president in the history of the United States to have done something like that. And the results are clear. He went to bat for a candidate very much opposed in Israel. And one can argue that his direct involvement in Netanyahu's campaign and the reciprocal of having Netanyahu as his guest here in the United States to boost support and to basically ensure his election would be a success. Have we crossed a line here that we really need to address? When a president can become the political sidekick of a candidate in the candidate's country, and basically for the single purpose of having that candidate elected, and it happens. So can the argument be made that President Trump is responsible for diluting the choices, diluting the decisions, diluting the process of elections in another country, specifically Israel? Is this a serious matter to you? Do you think that this is something that warrants immediate attention and rules made to curtail the actions of a president who decides, hey, I'm president, I can do whatever I want? And including having President Netanyahu come to the United States and addressing Congress directly, even warning and threatening Congress about what it's supposed to do to help Israel. I'm uncomfortable with that. And I think this warrants national discussion and rules set that the president of this country should never, ever be involved in political campaigning of any sort in any other country. That's this the other subject. And the third subject, which no one yet has addressed, is does Joe Biden look like he's going to be a viable candidate? And should he? Politics is a very strange thing. There are many people who say that, surprisingly, he's standing up for himself, despite the allegations of inappropriate behavior, which he has come out and said that he will watch himself, he will behave himself. He just comes out of a whole different era where the lines are not really hard and drawn between what is permissible in the sense of personal contact between the sexes, and specifically for somebody who's holding public office. But all that aside, he is older. He's perhaps now one of the oldest candidates in the field as it's developing so far. And does he look like he has potential in this race? What do you think? 888-874-4888. Jay from Texas, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you, Latrice? Blessings.
Fine, thank you, Jay. How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to, share some of my feelings about this situation in Brooklyn and the whole general idea behind, this program of vaccinations. I love having good health and whatever people feel that they can do, to bring that forward. That's a wonderful thing. However, I'm not totally, serene in the fact that with the profit margins involved, that, it's just going to be more of a corporate situation, a corporate culling of monies, as you could say. I don't understand this whole thing. It seems like a flawed science when you can be protected by getting a vaccination, which I've had them in my life. And then when somebody gets a disease, you're worried about the unprotected people. But that's what vaccinations were supposed to do, is protect you. If you're protected, why are you worrying about somebody else? And then you tell me it's safe, and it's safe, but we have a compensation program that's paid out billions of dollars. Those things don't make much, they don't fit level in my consciousness. But I thank you for being able to be here and bring this kind of thing up, because we really need to look at the heart of the matter, which is people not understanding, a lack of spiritual understanding and care and deep compassion for each other. So that's my comment.
But let me ask you, Jay, in this scenario, whose rights should prevail?
The
right of the city as custodian of the health of in terms of public policy, the city is a kind of custodian of the public's health. Is
mm-hmm,
the city does the city
mm-hmm.
have more rights or more power to dictate this issue of vaccination, or does the individual have more right and ultimately the right to decide whether to be vaccinated or not?
I think the individual has the higher right here. I think it's wonderful for there to be a person that holds a job, to bring about some kind of, security measure that they feel is necessary based on whatever science, flawed or perfect science. I think if you don't want something in your body, especially when you look at what it is they're getting, what's the real reality? What are the real numbers? And I don't think that's always seen. I think we live in a climate where things are spun towards making money. That's just my opinion.
Okay. I see your point. But here's the question. We are dealing here on a large scale. Right now, the measles outbreak is confined, as the city has made it known, to some specific areas that they're trying to contain possible contagion beyond these areas. So it is a matter of public health and a public emergency. Is there a way, in your view, individuals can maintain their sovereignty over their own bodies and therefore make the decision not to be vaccinated? Or is the city ultimately, does the city ultimately have the power to override even individuals' decisions?
I wouldn't give anyone supreme sovereignty over my sovereignty as a person. I wouldn't do that. I think it's a very dangerous precedent. And if somebody can just come in, like kick down the door and vaccinate everybody, and whatever they vaccinate you for, which is supposed to protect you, you'll still get sick from whatever because of, one, as I said, spiritual, lack of spiritual understanding and how we treat each other, which creates a DNA dynamic, which we know that from science, and also that people's habits are still the same what it is. The city's really dirty, you know? Texas is dirty. Everywhere is dirty. We need another protocol of love and reality, you know? And it's all like these big people that want to play because they're not feeling, they're not holding on to these children that are affected. And they're, like it's with the program. That program, how are you spending out money on things that are safe? So are they willing to be there to buffer the problem or any kind of injury? Money's not going to get it. They can print money tomorrow with no backing again. So, you know, I think people should stay sovereign, and I really appreciate you. You're such a beautiful person. I don't think anybody's auguring these kind of questions. Thank you, and I know you're healthy again. Thank you. Been listening for years. I appreciate you. Please keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate everyone as well. I think that's the greatest way to build community. And I thank you for offering your considered opinion today. James from Queens, what's on your mind? Which topic are you, or topics are you tackling?
Hey, Utrice.
Hey.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I echo the thoughts that were just shared, and you should actually, I think, just as a side note, take some time every week and share your daily practices that you follow with according to Gary's suggestions and keeping yourself healthy and everything like that, so more people will be aware that there's alternative methods instead of being forced to follow the, you know, the standard cut, burn, and poison chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery route for cancer. And basically the same thing goes for the right of the individual is above all first, and the government is there to protect and not obstruct. And just like David said earlier, all the studies and all the truth that is being hidden from the major mouthpieces of the propaganda media, New York Times and all that other garbage, you know, it was never said that back in 86, the industry pretty much forced Reagan's hand to sign the bill to never hold the industry of vaccines accountable because in the court of law, it was decided officially that every vaccine is a danger and there is no way around it. So they forced, you know, the government to give them complete immunity to never be held accountable so nobody could sue them. And then what they did is they took public money, you know, if anybody's listened to Gary or any wonderful researchers around the country and the world, here in America, I mean, you can't sue the individual manufacturers for damages, just like you can any other company that created that, whether it's a car manufacturer or plane manufacturer or whatever. You know, so you would be actually compensated from your fellow slush fund of your fellow citizens that they pull together, and the company is immune. They don't have to do anything. It's just pure profit for them, but they take our money, the taxpayers, and after a rigorous obstruction of justice for any parent or any child or any human being that was damaged by the vaccine, they only, and since 86, only paid out like close to $4 billion with a B. You know what I mean? So this is ridiculous. And if you heard Gary's just this last hour, he mentioned there's a couple of mouthpieces from Merck and from Goldman Sachs that are whispering in his ear from from the board of quote unquote public health. When there's no such thing as public health, it's all individual health. It's what you do, and you're not a herd of cows, which they all look at you and us at. Everybody needs to be educated and properly instructed that there's so many other ways to keep healthy yourself and your family, other than the garbage that they want to inject in you and create you into a less of a human by damaging your DNA and all that stuff.
Let's tackle this question, and your points are well taken. You have something here. Today it's measles. Tomorrow it could be Ebola. It could be any other highly contagious disease that would have devastating impact. What is, therefore, the approach in terms of public health and individual health? What is the approach that you think would be most successful in, one, containing the spread of diseases like this, and two, to protect the health of individuals who don't deserve being, sideswiped by a bout of some kind of a dreadful disease that they're not prepared to deal with?
Number one, if you understand, and hopefully you are enlightened from Gary and many other wonderful doctors around who have done a ton of research into this area and many other areas, just by having a wonderful regimen of good health based on plant-based, lots of juices, lots of vegetables, lots of fruits, lots of nuts and seeds, lots of beans, it's very simple. Instead of eating the crap that people are eating and having their immune system weakened, everybody would be a lot more flourishing in their health if they learned a thing or two that the government doesn't want to teach anybody to do, because the corporate powers that be want to promote their McDonald's and all that other crap that's Twinkies in the store that's really cheap for them to make and whatever. Okay, so number one,
we have to leave it there.
Number two is homeopathic.
James, I'm so sorry, we're out of time, but we can try to continue the discussion tomorrow, because I have a lot of other subjects that need to be explored. Thanks so much for listening, and we will team up again tomorrow. Bye-bye.